June 4th, 1940. Nazi forces enter Paris. Within 10 days, they control the entire city. By June 13th, 1940, the Parisians have evacuated, with the Nazis enforcing a curfew on its few remaining native inhabitants. The former City of Light waits for the Allies to arrive and lift the shadow that has fallen over Paris. However, the heroism of D-Day will have been for nothing if the Allies cannot hold the land beyond the beaches of Normandy.
Hello, I'm Slade. Welcome to the DLC for Call of Duty 3. Call of Duty 3 was developed by Treyarch, published by Activision. It is playable on the PS2, Xbox, Xbox 360, PS3, and Wii. Across the board, it has about a 8 out of 10, I would say, fairly across the board for your scoring, except for the Wii version, which is a 69, nice, out of 100. Call of Duty 3 is one of the first real, I would call this the ADHD campaign. You are going to follow an American campaign, a British SAS, which, you know, you hear those and you're like, oh, okay, yeah, sure. But then there's the Canadian campaign and the Polish campaign. Now, all these stories are interwoven together. So, as one, you'll like go play as the Americans, and then, you know, something that the British did in their campaign will benefit you there. It's very weird how it's, like, twisted in and around itself, but we're going to go... Normally, I would just say, oh, here's all the American levels, here's all the blah, blah, blah. This time, we're going to go in the story order. And a little fun fact, if you would like a good drinking game... Just take a shot every time I change who we're talking about. We'll start with the American campaign, which is the Saint Lo tutorial, known as one of the bloodiest battles that takes place through France, and then the second level, known as the Island. In the American missions, you take control over Private Nichols, who recently arrived in France and was eventually moved to the 29th Infantry Division. You meet fellow squad members, Sergeant Frank McCullen, Corporal Mike Dixon, Private Leroy Huxley. Huxley kind of does your tutorial in the first level, you know, teaches you how to throw grenades, how to shoot, how to hit stuff with your gun. You are then sent to take part in the capture of Saint Lo, where you meet Private First Class Salvador Guzzo, who's a radio operator, and he is kind of forced to be a part of your squad. After that, you're folded into the 9th Infantry Division, and this is where the island level takes place. You are just hedgerow fighting through France. And if you aren't aware of, like, a French hedgerow, they are dense, right? And when I say dense, they're like, tanks can't go through them. They had to make these special, like, hedgerow cutters to go on the front of tanks to get through it. And they are... just make little pockets and squares all over the place in France that you have to, like, fight through. So this is part of why they say, you know, some of the bloodiest, some of the hardest fighting, and you just don't know where anybody could pop out of one of those hedgerows, because you can kind of wriggle yourself through it, or you could hide a machine gun easily in it, and you'd never know the difference. 9th Drop is the first British level, where you play as a SAS sergeant, James Doyle, who is a returning character from Call of Duty United Offensive, and you take part with the French Resistance. You ride in a Jeep driven by Corporal Duncan Keith as you arrive to the base, where the sergeant is reunited with Major Ingram, who's also returning from Call of Duty United Offensive. And you learn about their planned meeting with the French Marquis Resistance. You go on about the cargo. They're riding in two jeeps named Vera and Lynn. As you go for your night drop, due to heavy fire from an 88mm gun, the plane is shot down and drops the squad with the two jeeps. Soon after landing, another soldier of the SAS, Private Wilkinson, is killed by a German soldier. Doyle is saved by the Marquis contact Pierre LaRoche, before he shares the same fate. Shortly afterwards, Doyle, Keith, and LaRoche find Vera, which was lost in the drop, but they drive her to the rendezvous point where they meet up with Isabelle Dufontaine, who informs them about a Marquis soldier who went missing, Marcel. While LaRoche stays behind to meet with Ingram, Doyle, Keith, Dufontaine, and Marcel, or they find Marcel, sorry, I'm trying to do my best with these French pronunciations. They find Marcel in a nearby mansion. Doyle, Keith, Dufontaine, and some Marquis soldiers then find Flak 88s with Doyle, and they end up destroying all three. Later, you escape with the remaining soldiers on the jeeps. We hop back over to the Americans, taking the Mayenne Bridge. Soon after the previous events of the island, the 90th assaults the town of Mayenne, where Huxley is tasked with defusing bombs planted on the bridge, which is heavily guarded by German infantry. Huxley is badly wounded in his leg before he can carry out his orders, and Sergeant McCullen successfully defuses the bombs but is killed in the process. His last words to Dixon are, Tell Guzzo, tell him to go to hell, and then he laughs maniacally. Dixon then assumes command of the squad and is promoted to sergeant. We're now on to the first Canadian campaign. And you are involved with the members of the 4th Canadian Armored Division. It is centered on Private Joe Cole, which is led by World War I veteran, Lieutenant Jean-Guy Rubicald. I think I'm saying that right. Terrible names. Who demonstrates a proud and often haphazardous style of leadership, often making assaults and completing objectives beyond his assigned mission at the risk of, well, everybody. You're also joined by Jonathan Calliard and Leslie Baron, who's a radio operator that Lieutenant Rubicald, I think I'm saying that right, he hates Baron because Baron is very timid. It's obviously his first time fighting, and he's scared. But, I mean, people are shooting at you. You should be scared. In this mission, your platoon captures an industrial area and successfully defends it from a larger German force. While they do so, tensions between Rubicald and Baron over his hesitance to go into battle really, really spikes up. In this level, we're back to playing as the SAS with the French Marquis. You then go to destroy a German-held fuel plant. Doyle, Keith, Pierre LaRoche are sent on the first to open the main gate to the fuel plant. They meet up with heavy German resistance, LaRoche providing covering fire from above as a sniper. Doyle and Corporal Keith open the main gate, allowing more SAS troops and French resistance to attack the fuel plant, Doyle and Keith proceeding to join them afterwards. The SAS jeeps are attacked by a German half-track, and it crashes, while their occupants are forced to get out. After eliminating German resistance with the help of LaRoche, they split up three different ways. Keith leads some men through the bottom part, Ingram goes through the office section, and the remaining Marquis go through the catwalks. Doyle chooses to follow one of those paths to take out his targets. While Doyle is planting charges on the fuel depot, you're attacked by a German. You defend yourself, throwing them over the railing. Ingram then comes with the others and finds a way to get out after Doyle and Keith have planted the rest of the charges. While escaping the fuel plant in a German vehicle, Ingram's truck is blown away by a nearby explosion and is believed dead. Tensions are rising as Corporal Keith accuses Marcel of collaborating with the Germans. And Keith also wants to go out and find Ingram, but the French are like, no, he must be dead. Now we're going to play as the Polish, and you're a Polish tank division commanding a Sherman Firefly. Sherman Fireflies are sometimes confused with the American EZ-8. Or that is the M4A8, or EZ-8 as it's also known. Sherman Firefly Cool tank, by the way. There's a great video on it from the Tank Museum. I'll probably link it in a Twitter post. But what's neat about it is that to fit this gun in there, and I think it's 105mm cannon. I mean, this thing's massive, and it's designed as a Sherman to be a tank killer, which is pretty cool to get to operate. The gun had to go in there sideways, and it also removed the whole machine gunner. Super cool idea from the British. Really interesting development. I would highly recommend it. But let's get back to Call of Duty before I ramble on about tanks for a while. The Polish campaign revolves around Corporal Boter Wachode. Boter Wachode. That's how you say that. A member of the tank crew in the Polish 1st Armored Division, led by Major Stan Papajak Jakowicz, and consisting of Corporal Joachim Lucky Rudd, Redsky, Sergeant Lukasz Big Boom Kowalski, and Private Marquet Beska Ulan, and yourself. The tank crew takes parts in sweeping across the French countryside, taking on plenty of German armor, and then finally you get to take on the feared tank, what's called, they call it Richter. It's a King Tiger, and if you know anything about German tanks, like, people fear tigers, a King Tiger is even more beefy and bigger gun. It's massive and wild to think that they came up with this thing, but it has a fatal spot in the back of it. It's also very prone to not artillery, but being bombed by aircraft because the engine is basically open up top. It's a really stupid design flaw, but that's what ends up taking it out at the end, and you get to celebrate with your tech squad. Now we're on to a level called the Forest, which is another American level. I refer this as the obligatory sniper level / war crime trench gun level. The squad is tasked with clearing out, again, doing my best with these pronunciations, Forêt de Ukovs. Ukovs? I don't know French. So the 2nd Battalion can move through in Forêt de Ukovs. I think it's Ukovs? Nichols plants explosives on 2 German supply caches, and in the end, you use a mortar left over by a German team to clear a roadblock. That's probably about the shortest level yet. Now we're back over to another Canadian level. While the Polish 1st Armored Division guards the western flank, the Canadian unit clears a forest near the Liaison River, during which Robin Cloud continues to berate Baron over his lack of getting into combat. Baron insists that his duty in His Majesty's Army is to defend the radio. Is radio man first, rifleman second. Obviously, Robert Claude has none of this, and there's basically just a big berating of the two of them back and forth. Baron lets Robin Claude know that, you know, the Poles need a, the Polish need a radio operator. And Robin Cloud, just kind of tired of him, is like, well, get going, see you later, and dismisses him to be a part of the Polish 2nd Armored holding Hill 626. Now we're back over to another American level. This is just a generic fighting through France level, if I'm honest with you. The squad takes part in clearing out a nearby town with vital crossroads. Toward the end of the assault, Sergeant Dixon is wounded, but he survives. After taking a shortcut through the sewers, you find the crossroads and successfully take it with the help of some Sherman tanks. The unit is then sent to defend the town of Chambois from the Axis trying to escape out of the Falaise Gap. Now we're going to jump back over to the SAS, which in this level is called Hostage. And against the advice of the French resistance, Keith and Doyle attempt to locate Ingram with Marcel, Laroche, Dufontaine, and other members of the Marquis soon following. After Doyle, Keith, and Marcel rescue Ingram, the Marquis and SAS fighters rescue 3 more Marquis prisoners. Later in the fierce firefight at the rally point, a German car comes into the battle. Doyle and Isabel flank around it. Well, that's Isabel Dufontaine, in case you forgot the last names. Flank around it, allowing her to set some charges. Unfortunately, she is killed in the explosion. After the fight is over, Keith is seen comforting Marcel over his loss and praising the bravery of the Marquis. showing that he does have some respect for the French resistance fighters. We jump back over to the Canadians, where Robin Claude proceeds to clear the town to rescue some captured Canadian tank crew. But rather than withdraw with the rescued servicemen, he decides to assist in capturing the whole town. This goes back to later, as we talked about, Lieutenant Robin Claude, his attitude about like trying to push his men further than they're really capable. The group manages, though, to defend the from a German counterattack. After capturing the town, however, a king tiger appears. The men flank around it and plant demolition charges in a German ammunition dump to destroy the tank. But it is discovered that the fuse is a dud. Sergeant Calliard suddenly sacrifices himself in a bit of bravery by detonating the charges manually, destroying the tank and the ammunition dump. Saddened, Robin Cloud decides to nominate Calliard posthumously. For hit the Victoria Cross, and Cole is promoted to the rank of corporal. They then start moving reinforcements through the town to help the 1st Polish Armored Division, who are now defending Hill 262. We move back into the Polish campaign. The Poles are moved into a position at the base of Mount Ormel, also known as Hill 262, where they are assaulted by the remnants of the German 7th Army. Desperate to escape the Flies Pocket, Bortier and his crew defend the hill against German tanks, but eventually their Sherman Firefly is destroyed and the crew abandons it. They are joined in battle alongside with Polish infantry units and other tanks holding off the German attack. When they get to Major Jakowicz, he is with Kowalski defending against a wave of Germans assaulting the hill. Kowalski is then killed by a tank shell, as well as many other Polish soldiers. The remainder of the crew and the Polish soldiers start to retreat up the Maes through pockets of German-infested trenches. Baron, from the Canadian campaign, right? So this is how, starting to see how it all kind of ties together, I hope. Baron arrives to call in artillery, but is killed by a stray shot after refusing to retreat from an overrun position. Ulan scavenges his radio, which is used again to call in artillery strikes. In the final minutes of the level, while Radunsky is running up the hill, a German tank fires and kills Radunsky, leaving three remaining Polish to fight off the Germans. Papa Jack commands Bortier and Ulan to defend the hill against the advancing German troops. As the three fall back up the hill, they see that they are the only ones left. As they look up, Ulan says he sees green flares, but Jakowicz then says it's not the Canadians. The Germans charge up the hill, and only the three Polish soldiers left try to hold off the charge with the Germans coming over the walls. Then green flares light the sky as Canadian forces attack the Germans, making them retreat towards Chambois. The Canadian infantry arrive that day for the Poles on Hill 262. After that level, Lieutenant Robin Cloud is seen talking to Major Jakowicz, saying to him and his men have done an excellent job defending the hill, also telling him the Germans have only one escape route, that being Chambois. Alright, we're finally to the big dramatic ending part of the game, where he plays the Americans in the city of Chambois. Your unit is defending the town of Chambois from the Axis forces trying to escape the Falaise Gap. The squad ends up in a big firefight with Germans on one of the roads, and Huxley is ordered to get a bazooka to fend off from enemy tanks. Eventually, the squad has to fall back to the rallying position. Later, they arrive at a large area with many Germans and tanks on the other side. Guzzo's radio gets shot, so he is not able to call in artillery like he normally would. So he decides to go out there and mark him with flares, to which he gets shot, and he's being peppered by machine gun ammo. So you and Dixon go out to get him. You and Dixon go down to get Guzzo and carry him back up to safety and away from the marking flares for air support. While treating Guzzo, Dixon is shot in the back and dies a few moments later, giving his last words to Guzzo. He says, McCullen told me to tell you, you should go to hell. Guzzo tells Dixon, "Oh, forget him, Dix. You're not dying like him." Dixon then says, "But you're okay, Guzzo. You're okay." Dixon then dies. After that, a U.S. soldier comes up to the squad telling them that they are needed on the other side of town. Guzzo takes command, since he's private first class, of the squad. And they need help getting rid of a tank. So the squad covers him, takes out the tank. After fighting through the rest of the town, squad holds off Germans until reinforcements arrive. The Flay's pocket is finally closed. Guzzo is then promoted to sergeant. This is also shown as the new leader of the squad, and he even gives McCollin's pep talk of rule one, you're no good to me dead. Oh, what does it matter anyway? You'll all probably end up dead. 4 days later, on the 25th of August, Paris is liberated, bringing an end to the Battle of Normandy. Alright, this one took a bit. It wasn't like it was longer to play or anything, but because the story bounces back and forth so much and interweaves within itself between all the different, I guess, how do I want to word this? The way the story like shows you how all these different things that people are doing is helping the one goal that everybody has in general is really cool to see. There's another thing I didn't talk about much in this that's kind of new to this is the QTEs, quick time events, were very new. This isn't the last Call of Duty game to have them, but it is the first one to really introduce them. Between the setting like C4 charges is like a QTE, and then there are times where like you'll go through a doorway and a enemy soldier
will try to just melee you to death, and you have to do a QTE sequence to
not die or whatever. But they're like not skippable, and they're very much scripted to the story. Some of the other things, it is neat to see the Canadians be represented. I feel like there's not many games, if any, that really talk about them, or the Polish, which is also, again, really cool to see, really different for this one. I like the way the stories intertwine. I feel like the SAS one is kind of just short horseshoed in, because not much you do in that seems like it really has an effect on everything else going on, like the Polish, Canadian, and American one. You can tell how they're intertwined with the fact that, you know, how the units are moving, and you hear them talk about, oh, the Canadians are to the west or the Polish to the east, whatever. You can tell that, but you don't really see that same thing for the British. There's another little detail in here that I think is interesting, and it's that the guns have different sights depending if you play this on the PS2 or the 360. Kind of an odd choice, but it is a choice, I suppose. I'm not too sure why Treyarch decided to do this, so if you play on the PS2, you get the same sights as Call of Duty 2 Big Red 1. But if you play on the 360, then you get like the Call of Duty 2, just like regular edition. You get those sights. I find that a very odd choice that I don't understand too much. Overall, this was really fun to go back and visit. Again, I know I'm repeating the last two episodes. I am nostalgic for this one. I think if I had to pick one of the three I had the best time with, I would say it's Finest Hour. But if you have an old console kicking around somewhere and you haven't played one of these, I would highly encourage you to. I don't want to call these great or perfect games, but compared to what you get in a lot of games now, I've been having more fun playing older games because at least some energy was cared about in the story. Reminds me, one more thing. The driving in this one, it's first person only on the PS2, and then 360, you can go in the third person. I think that's a hardware limitation. Just wanted to point that out there. This game also, just for how young I was when I played it for the first time, I had my mom take me to GameStop, and I had to have a GameStop employee explain to me what the R3 button was, because I just thought I had the wrong controller. Which I think is really funny. This episode has probably gone on long enough. So I hope you enjoyed this last episode of the DLC, or I say last episode. We could do more. I'm not sure if we will or when this will come back around. But I would like to thank y'all for listening to me for the last three episodes, and Joey for filling in with Dark Souls. I actually really enjoyed the Dark Souls episode. That's one of his favorite things. And yeah, this has been fun to do. It's very different for us. I know I'm kind of rambling here, but it's odd to have the time to say everything that I want to in an episode. If you would like to chat more about this, you can find me pretty much everywhere at Slade Plays Games. You can find me on Instagram at Slade's Life, or hop into our Discord. Have you played one of these before? Let me know. I would be interested in. I feel like these three Call of Duties that I've done this on, they're not talked about whatsoever. So if you have any past experience or want to talk about something I left out, give me a shout.